Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
Hey there, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. Thank you very much for joining. My name is Scott McKenzie, and you are listening to the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. That's my story, and that is what I'm sticking to. It is about you. You industrial professionals, the companies that get it done, this platform is dedicated to you. We celebrate you because you are bold. You are brave. You dare greatly. You're changing the world. We need you more than ever. Darn right we do. But we have a great interview. The gentleman's name is Martin Robinson, CEO, founder of Iris. He's a leader in reliability. We're going to be talking a lot about designing safety into equipment, making it more reliable. Let's get going. Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. We always have a great conversation, no doubt about that. But before we really get into it, I want you to get your pencil and paper out, and we're going to be talking a little bit about May 21st. Put that down. May 21st, 2020 at 11 a.m. Eastern Time for a virtual conference that is brought to you by IIoT World. Be ready to scale digital for manufacturing 4.0. Through challenging times. It's sponsored by Hitachi Vantara. Now, you know Hitachi Vantara. They're leaders in anything that's digital. They're fantastic. Their reach is wonderful. They're dedicated to your success, just like IIoT World. And, you know, as I continue to harp on the collaboration, harp on the innovation, harp on education. You see how I'm going all the shuns and action. And then, of course, you got to do it with some speed. And you got to do it. And you're going to fail. You're going to have some struggles. But you know what? You can't hold back. You need to do these things. And when I look at webinars just like this one from IIoT World, sponsored by Hitachi Vantara, it fits into the collaboration. It fits into the innovation. It fits into the education, of course. And it is right now, and you can take advantage of it. So go out to IIoT-world.com. It'll also be out there on industrialtalk.com. So let's get on with the interview. The gentleman's name is Martin Robinson, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the benefits of adopting a designing for safety and reliability approach to industrial maintenance. You're going to say to yourself, Scott, I don't know what that means. Well, you know Martin does, because he's a leader. He's a leader in what we're going to be talking about. He's passionate about, definitely, you coming home at night, and passionate about the ability to design within your operations a safer, more effective way of doing your job. How can you argue with that? So you can't. So here is Martin Robinson, right? Iris is the company. That's IRISS. He is the founder and CEO, and just all-around great chap. So enjoy the interview, and thank you again for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. Hey, Martin, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. So glad that you are here. I know you're a busy guy. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for the invite. It's always nice to have a chat. So we're doing good under the circumstances. These incredible circumstances.
If you're out there on video and you're looking at Martin, you can tell that he's got a nice location, nice lighting back there. He's hanging out, man. It's all good.
I've locked myself away from three golden retrievers and five granddaughters. So,
that's pretty good.
Don't be surprised if they come running in.
I don't care. In fact, that would be a great time. I'd say, hey, how you doing? All
absolutely,
that good stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. For the listeners out there,
granddad's working.
Justice.
Hey, granddad's working.
For the listeners out there, give us a little background on who you are and why you're such an incredible professional.
I've been called many things, probably not an incredible professional. So my name's Martin Robinson. Obviously, I'm the CEO of Iris. Ex-military, did 17 years in the British Army as what you guys class as a combat fleet engineer. So that was my background, really. You know, I learned I was taught to be a mechanic by the military, and then the military teach in a very precise, methodical manner. That's the way we do things in the military, and that really set me up to. So when I left the army, I went to work in research and development on engines, because I'm a mechanic. I work in an electrical field, but I'm a mechanical engineer. So I went to work on prototype engines, spent several years doing that, really got into thermography during an R&D phase of engines.
Thermography.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. So that's really how I got into the condition monitoring stuff. And it sort of took off from there. I went from there, started working through facilities, walked away from the R&D aspects of combustion engines, which was always my passion, and then really started working in, you know, with facilities companies doing condition monitoring. I got into ultrasound and vibration analysis and all the full suite of technologies. And I had a service company in London, and then we were having real issues with the infrared of energized electrical panel.
Yeah, because the way you do it is you got to open up the cabinet and then you got to sort of zap it there, and you don't want to open up that cabinet if there's some issues going on there.
That's it. But back then, mate, you'd open up the cabinet and people were going in with an insulated screwdriver and tighten things up if you found a problem. I mean, those were the way we worked back then. Oh, I mean, we were happy in our ignorance, should we say? That got more difficult. So I sort of invented a polymer window system that we utilized to make windows in those cabinets. That was the IRIS, which stood for Infrared Inspection Support Solutions. I had a company called Global Maintenance Technologies, and IRIS was an off-spin product that I had from GM Tech days. And then, you know, IRIS became its own monster, fast overtook my service business. It's sort of that thing, you know, you build it in your garage and
And I love the model. I love it because now all of a sudden you can do something that is effective, look into the hazard of that particular cabinet. Let's say if there is, if you're getting some stuff going on, you don't have to open it up. You can at least use the tools available to be able to assess the condition of that particular whatever breaker, whatever you want to call it.
No, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, the electrical services industries are the most dangerous, you know, in the world. I mean, you know, one in 10 recordable injuries for an electrician is a fatality.
Yeah, it's not.
So when you start to look at that, it's one in 300 for non-electrical, or one in 10 for electrical. So it's crazy, crazy, crazy. But unfortunately, it happens every day. You know,
everybody does. Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, you're absolutely right. Okay. Let's get on to the interview real quick. And I want to be able to point that out, because you're talking about safety. You're talking about reliability practices within organizations and how they approach it. And one of the things that sort of sticks in my craw is that we all talk about it, but we never really do it really good. There might be some companies that talk about, hey, we're going to be reliability and we're going to commit to it. But there's always these ebbs and flows when it comes to a culture of reliability. And that to me is always, and it's over and over and over. And I think today, Martin, that companies need to look at this even more closely and commit to a true reliability program. Do you agree?
Totally agree.
Because it's now. Stop dicking around with it in the past and like, yeah, we're going to do it. No, do it for real.
Yeah. I mean, last year, I still put myself for a load of training and I go on courses and, you know, I attended quite a few workshops and things in 2019. A couple of the good ones were with Ron Moore. He's sort of operational excellence.
Good old Ron.
And then Doc Palmer, a couple of his things on, you know, MRO stuff and things. And then the one that really, you know, I sat down, I was chatting with Jack Nicholas, and I'm not just throwing these names out. I mean, I'm pleased to say I know these people and I enjoy spending time with them.
Yeah, they're legends, learn so man. Much you're, from you're just, you're name dropping.
But they're true mentors. Yeah, but they share. I mean, these people, they share their knowledge with you. It's not like, it's not a black art and they're not sharing. They really want it. Yeah. and those that know Jack know he's been around a long, long time. You know, he's sort of the gentleman of the old gentleman of reliability, as I sort of call him. But Jack said to me, it goes 50 years ago, Martin, he said, this study came out on RCM. And he goes, I clapped my hands together and I went, you know something? They get it at last. Because if you look at RCM, it's a very military thing. And obviously, Jack's a, his background's totally, a submariner. And things like that. But,
outside of his desire to share reliability, if you ever get in a conversation about the Nautilus and all that stuff, about how he was participating,
yeah,
it's
absolutely
fantastic. It's like, yeah. Continue.
But he said to me, 50 years ago, he goes, they get it at last. Now he had the ammunition to really push the reliability platforms outside. And then he goes, you know something? 50 years later, they still get it, but nobody's doing anything.
It's so frustrating. And I'm telling you, it's not as if the stats are not there, Martin. The stats are there that it saves lives. It improves your bottom line. It keeps that asset up and running. It does everything that, from a business point of view, should be just top line discussion and thought. And yet people don't. They get distracted by reactive type of activities, and that's it, man. Once it gets going on that reactive mode, that's it. Flying in on a white horse, I'll repair it. And everybody's like, yay, he repaired it. And it all gets lost.
Obviously, being a mechanic, my passions are there. I love cars and things like that. But I tend to look at what we did in the automotive field, because everybody has cars. Not everybody has a piece of switchgear they have to take over. So I looked at sort of something that sort of dawned on me many years ago was, a long time ago, we just had pure time-based maintenance structures on vehicles. 6,000 miles, 6 months, came in, you pull it apart, you rebuild it, you send it out the door. But then all of a sudden, the automotive industry recognized, if we could reduce the servicing schedules and monitor some of the more fundamental parameters of an automotive engine, like airflows, viscosities, NOX emissions, all that sort of thing, then we could do less maintenance and find the problems before they get any worse and fix them before. So the customer's experience would be, it would cost less to run the vehicle and it would become more reliable because we would find out that the problems occurring before they went bang.
Yeah.
Okay. That's CBM, RCM, call it what you bloody like, in a nutshell. Why did they do that? Because it made sense. That there was the commercial model was there, that if they did that first, then their vehicle cost less to service and it was more reliable. That was the perception. Okay? Exactly the same thing. You look at our equipment that we work on today, and it's nuts, because I'm like, hang on, all I'm asking you to do is adopt the same damn thing that you've got in that thing on four wheels outside the front door that you rely on. That's what I'm asking you to do.
Yeah, but why don't we do that? Because I'll tell you right now, if I buy a car today, even my Ford pickup, if I can't drive to Timbuktu and back reliably, I'm pissed off. Absolutely. I expect that thing to continue to run. I jump in, fire up, boom, go. And yet we can't do the same thing within industry. Why?
Sorry. Because it's money. what I'm saying to you is, if you make your money, and this is controversial, but I'm a businessman and I have the same concerns. If you make your money in selling maintenance, time-based maintenance structures, you're going to go in everything, you're going to open it up, you're going to pull it around, you're going to play with it, you're going to write the checks, you've got maintenance models, everything else. I don't want you to, I'm a maintenance killer. To me, maintenance is a failure, all right? What I need to do is monitor the condition of a piece of equipment, mechanical, electrical, anything. Monitor its condition,
right. Understand
the failure parameters, and have a model that, and it isn't predictive engineering is BS. There's no such thing as predictive engineering. You can't predict failure. I can't tell you that pump's going to run for 551 hours and 3 minutes. I can't tell you that. I can tell you when it gets to a level where the performance is outside of my expected requirements. Now, you could call that a functional failure, call it what you like. But so many uneducated customers, and I don't say that to be disrespectful, but so many uneducated customers say, predict, yeah, well, I want you to be able to predict when it's going to fail. But failure isn't a thing going bang. Failure is its ability to deliver what you require operationally. So the argument for me has always been condition monitoring, you can trend to a deliverable, not a failure. I mean, you can class a failure as I'm not getting so many gallons a minute or, you know, so many amps per cycle, whatever. You can dictate that. So I always feel that my main thing is we have an industry who makes money from maintenance, from time-based shutdowns.
Yep.
Okay. And all I'm saying to you is today you are a mechanic or an electrician, whatever, but tomorrow you're a reliability guy. You're doing the same damn stuff, but instead of throwing yourself in there with a hammer and a screwdriver and a chisel or whatever, all I'm asking you to do is use technology. So you're going to use thermal imaging, ultrasound, partial discharge, vibration analysis, dissolved gas analysis, oil in that. There's so many, so much technology there that you can find these problems before the damn thing blows up. And every time you shut it down and every time you stick your hand in there, every time you do something to it, you're breaking it more than you're fixing it.
Yeah, so and you're opening it up to doggone safety-related issue, too.
Absolutely.
It's like, you're introducing failures when you open it up, crack open the chest, and you get on in there. And then you're also, you know, running the risk of, you know, slipping, falling, cutting off your whatever.
Absolutely.
It happens all the time.
Exactly. If your doctor said, I'm going to open you up to check your heart, you'd go, piss off. Yeah. But what does your doctor do? He'll do a blood test, which is oil analysis. He'll hook you up to an EKG, which is monitoring. They do all the test. They do the testing because they recognize the more they interfere with your body, the more chances there are of you either getting an infection or you breaking down or them causing a secondary issue. So they never want to do that. Machines are the same. Leave them alone.
But it's just, once again, it gets down to dollars and cents. I'll put on the CFO and I'm looking at the maintenance dollars. It's a one for one, you know, I spend it up here and it goes down when it's just bad. But then you're telling me to do analysis on these assets, this equipment. And it's still, I'm charging the company. I'm one for one. It's a maintenance procedure. What benefits, what value, what dollar, I'm a CFO. What dollar benefits am I going to receive if I shift my mindset and say, do the doggone testing now, repair before it quote fails, it's outside of whatever you're testing. Why is that important for me as a company? I'm still spending money on it, dude.
Absolutely, but you're spending your money much wiser. I mean, the fact of it is, Ron Moore last year, I went on a 3-day operational excellence course, and it was wonderful. And there's a few, every time you do these courses or seminars or whatever, you always come away with a few pearls of wisdom and a few nuggets that you can use.
Jeez, but some of the things that come on, man, you're Martin Robinson.
No, mate, listen, nobody knows everything. And if you do, you're a schmuck. Ron, I love Ron has a great saying. If you've ever sat through any of his things, he says, I've got data on that. I mean, that man has data on everything. And it's not just one company, you know, and he links in with guys like, you know, John Schultz, Klaus Back, all these guys, they share information with him and Ron shares it with everyone else. So these are coming from some very high level sources that you can trust. And there's a couple of major things. If you move to a condition-based model, Ron shows in certain instances, you can see a 60% plus reduction in reactive maintenance levels. How much is that worth? Now, if you've got zero reactive maintenance, I wouldn't believe you, but if you do zero reactive maintenance, that doesn't save you anything. But if you're doing $10 million in reactive maintenance a year, it's going to save you $6 million. There's so significant reductions in the breakdowns. You can reduce your PM significantly. By doing condition monitoring, you can see a 40, 30, 40, 50% reduction in PMs and other tasks. But the long game, reliability is about the long game, not the short game.
How do you sustain that? Great. Fantastic. Yeah. Ron's a rock star, absolutely has data on it. You agree. It's always the same thing. How do you, these are two things. How do you sustain it? And then when it falls apart because nobody really cares about it anymore, and then you come back in and say, hey, we want to do it. And then the whole culture is like, oh yeah, right, we've already done this before, blah, blah, blah. How are we
going to do it? No, absolutely, yeah.
It's like, holy cow.
Yeah. Well, another thing, I mean, for me, again, I did my asset management certifications and all that with the Institute of Asset Management in 2018, 2019. And again, one thing that came out of there was the concept of what we call TCO, or total cost of ownership. Now, as individuals, we have a different perception on TCO, i.e. you got your full truck outside, your total cost of ownership is probably 80% is in the purchase, 20%, probably 70% is in the purchase of your truck, and 30% is the gas and servicing and that.
Right.
Da, da, da,
yeah? Right.
Now, that's, you know, you buy a washing machine, it's probably all upfront cost is the way we look at it. So that's when we look at assets, personal assets, we do that. But when you look at assets in industry, it's the other way around. You know, the purchase of the asset is the small bit. That could be 15 to 25%, even a power station.
Yeah.
You know, 25% of the design, build, blah, 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 that's to get the thing built in. The rest of it for the next 50, 60, 70, 80 years is running the damn place. You know what I mean? So it's the spares, MRO, training, you know, XXXX. Now, that's what we call total cost of ownership. Okay, so the fact of it is, we know that reliability practices can really impact what we call hidden costs, not the upfront costs, but the hidden costs, which is spares, maintenance, training, you know, all the things that we do to keep that plant running. And, you know, Ramesh Gugliotti, again, I've seen some studies that Ramesh done. Ramesh shows in some studies that up
another
to
a rock star.
But again, yeah, but you, these guys, but they all share with us, mate.
Share.
I mean, none of them are secrets.
And I'm going to tell you right now, and hold on to that, Martin, that is an incredible point. And especially now when we are talking about this elephant in the room, which is the virus, we need to do it more than ever. We need to share.
Absolutely.
I don't think we have, I know we don't have all the answers. And the only way we're really going to move forward is at this spirit of collaboration. Your community, the reliability community, has this tremendous spirit of collaboration. Nothing is held close to the chest. It's all. Yeah, hey, I have data. I hear it. This is what I hear, and that is what. I digress. I divert. Whatever. I go off on a tangent. That's what makes what you're talking about very special. And I just kudos to you and the rest of the community who just like, yay, here you go. We need more of that. Continue.
We're all stuck at home, mate. That's probably why we're doing a lot of it.
But the dog park's closed now for whatever reason. I'm upset.
But Ramesh's study shows, and this I think was in it when he was at Jacobs, up to a 40% reduction in total cost of ownership.
Now, that's
a huge number.
That is huge.
That's about a complete asset maintenance strategy. Now, don't forget, reliability, as far as that's concerned, reliability is not about maintenance or servicing. Where reliability is about defect elimination. When you get into it, and that's in purchasing, design. I mean, defect elimination in every single phase. Maintenance is only a small bit of it, you know, but that small bit is still a huge, huge number.
Yeah.
But we look at, you know, defect elimination in everything we do. So what dawned on me is when I look at reliability platforms and everything else, and again, another big name, Doug Plucknett, you know, he's got some great stuff. And Doug's, for me, like RCM Blitz, when he brought that out, really, really sort of started hitting home with certain things. But again, I did some papers with Doug way back when, and the thing that really, again, he shared with me, and what hit me the most was most RCM plans or strategies fail on implementation. So you've got someone comes into a company, yeah, we're going to do this, and they get a little cross-functional team together, and they design it, yeah.
Yeah.
He gets kudos. He pisses off to another plant to start it, and it all starts to fall down behind him. You know what I mean? So this is like an RCM thing. It's like, now, if I wrote a business model today for my company, is it going to be the same next year? No. Is it going to be the same? Is it going to be the same next week? Not today. No, it's changing. My business plan is changing and evolving. So where I'm coming from is plans are not static. They evolve. And an RCM thing isn't static. It evolves. It changes with technology, with manpower, with operations. So it's a continually moving piece. But one of the biggest things, so I thought, well, let me just look at my bit. Yeah, because I just got to concentrate on my bit, which at the moment is electrical, but let's look at that. One of the things that sort of dawned on me was that to do condition monitoring of assets can be hazardous and dangerous and just a total ball ache, to be frank. You know, people don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So that's when I looked at, you know, design. There's been a term DFR, design for reliability. It's been bandied around. It's like operator-driven reliability, design for reliability, blah, 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 blah. All buzzwords. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that it dawned on me was, you know, safety and reliability for me are the same thing. If you've got world-class reliability, you've got world-class safety by virtue of default. If you've got world-class safety, you have world-class reliability by virtue of default because they do the same thing. You know, you stay in the room.
You're eliminating the defects. You're just
absolutely.
That's it.
Absolutely.
It's like either it's a defect with, you know, if I go out into a plant and the steps are all messed up, I got to remove that defect and make the steps very safe.
Yeah.
Done. Eliminate.
Absolutely. So looking at so we now call it in Irish, it's a term we use. It's called DFSR, Designing for Safety and Reliability.
Yes.
Okay. See, I'm ex-military, so we love acronyms and buzzwords. It's a great way of teaching, yeah. But DFSR, Designing for
Safety. It's a great way of teaching for you. For me, what the hell
another,
is that?
Another one. So Designing for Safety and Reliability. Okay, safety first. It's not reliability and safety, designing for safety and reliability. Then when you're in a room full of people and you go, who's responsible for safety? You go, everybody sticks their hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you go, who's responsible for reliability? And they're looking for Fred because he's the reliability manager. That's him. But we're trying to get one thing. Everybody's responsible for it. Everybody. So in my company, for instance, you know, we have our monthly huddles. And I say to my staff, I went, look, I need you to look at your bit of Irish, just your small piece of Irish, no matter what it is, powder coating, grinding, cleaning, whatever, even clean, whatever it is, whatever your small piece of Irish is, and I want you to improve it. I want you to make it better. Yeah, so we have these monthly things where people put in their suggestions and we have the suggestion of the month. But all I'm asking them to do is to look at that. So when I look at DFRS or DFSR, whichever way you want to look at it, all I'm saying to them is, let's put in place something that makes it easier. So if I need to do thermography or ultrasound or partial discharge or vibration analysis, let me put in a really simple measuring solution that it makes it so easy to do that it's not that ball ache. It becomes, so you know, in facilities, we have a thing called rounds and readings. I don't know if you've ever heard that term.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, so when they walk around the meat machines and they're literally writing down.
Think.
Yeah, exactly. So all we're saying is, let's make reliability as simple and as usable as a rounds and reading scenario. So I now have security guards taking data from primary energized switch gear and plant because they're just plugging in and writing down a number. Yeah, and we're doing the same for vibration. Vibrations added, you know, remote sensors, then your IoT and blah, 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 blah.
But Martin, you're taking my job away, man. I'm a maintenance professional. You're taking my job away. And I'm addicted to the excitement of doing a maintenance project. But you're taking my job away.
Okay, are you addicted to tearing open a panel that doesn't need anything? I didn't train you just to get you to do monkey see, monkey do stuff. Yeah, I trained you to fix stuff. And by the way, the data collection should be done with the lower skill sets, entry-level engineers, your younger engineers coming in. So, you know, we have multiple levels. And I've had some big arguments with guys. I'm a CBM guy. I've been doing this for years. You're making me you're making me look like I don't know what I'm doing. I went, hang on a minute. First and foremost, I've never found an infrared camera that can fix anything. Yeah, or a vibration analyzer or an ultrasound. They can't fix nothing. Okay, that's not what they're designed to do. the entry-level guy is doing a lot more data. So everything's data-driven, you know, condition monitoring, if you like it, or what I call surveillance. That's about getting as much data as possible so we can start to train to that unwanted condition, yeah, be it whatever we class that as. What that means is that the younger engineers are running around getting the data, and my skilled guys are actually fixing things that have been found to be wanting during these monitoring practices. Now, there's not enough of these guys to do that. We have a huge problem coming up, mate. I've read several studies in Forbes, etc. The baby boomers are all going, yeah? We do not have enough electricians. We do not have enough mechanics, and we haven't trained them. We haven't trained them. So we need technology to dig us out of the crap, because it's that Constantina effect. Also, we recognize, so train, but you can't roll them out overnight. So now we're using technology through condition monitoring to manage the risk, and the minimum skill sets that I do have, these engineers, that are, these highly trained engineers, will go out and fix things that have been found to be needed repair.
Okay, one last question, because we got to wrap this up. There's a what about these IIoT devices? Can't you just put a device within your cabinet that automatically reads and scans and does the IR and I don't even need a human being, because I'll just take that data and stick it into some sort of analytical tool, and it says like it's good, and now it's out of parameter or whatever, and then I'll call.
You can do. I mean, we have devices that do that, but they're it's how, what devices where, and they get very expensive very quickly. Now, my thoughts on IoT is, if it's for, you know, fundamentally for unmanned sites or super critical assets, if I have engineers on site who are more than capable of taking data, getting around the machines and everything else, why am I going to put IoT in there? You know, I worked as a R&D engineer, you know, for a long time, and we used to do machine modeling, or CAE, computer aided engineering, and something that dawned on me is like, if you put crap in, you get crap out.
The
models have to be so tight for you to actually use them. There are companies, and again, I'm not trying to say that to be derogatory, but it is. But so for me, manned sites, I don't want to take people out of the game. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with a nose, the eyes and the ears. Equipment's great, you know, but you've got experienced guys that can walk in a room and know if there's a problem. I never want to get rid of those chaps. These are the people, they're the lifeblood of the equipment.
Yeah, but they, you're going to have to figure something out, because you just stated something out of Forbes and saying, hey, we're getting rid, you know, all these baby boomers are retiring and going off to bigger and better things and playing golf or whatever they're doing. And we're going to have to figure out to become more effective or efficient, and
that's where condition monitoring works. Yeah, that's why monitoring the condition.
Yeah.
And only, you know, that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's it. You know, we're going to monitor. We don't need high skilled engineers to gather data.
You know, what's going to be a bitch about this whole thing is that people are hypersensitive. When I say hypersensitive, they're listening at least for strategies. Like, you're unique, Martin, because you've got a manufacturing company that manufactures reliability type of equipment. So you better be living and breathing reliability, just because you manufacture products that fall right in line. It's like, I better go to your floor, and I better be safe, and it better be reliable as hell, just because, well, you've been. But people are hypersensitive now, and they're listening to solutions and strategies. And yeah, we've done the reliability thing, but the same old stuff. I'm telling you right now, listeners, you have got to look into this, you know, this reliability, safety, reliability design, and do it.
Absolutely.
Stop dicking around and make it happen.
Yeah, I get asked all the time, where shall I start? Where shall I start? And I say, you know something? I'm going to tell you somewhere to start that isn't going to cost you a penny. I want you to sit down and look at all of your PMs and work out which ones are needed and which ones aren't. That doesn't cost you anything but time. And guess what? You've got a crap load of that at the moment.
Oh, you know they do.
Yeah. Then that ain't going to cost you nothing. And then out of that PM optimization strategy or PM review, you're going to start to see big holes that you are just throwing money away. So that's what I'm like, to stop that.
Okay, so that's number one. Do that.
Yeah, do that. So it's easy.
Don't come to me and say, Scott, I can't do it. because that's a lie. Don't.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah,
easy.
That's real low hanging fruit. Yeah. In fact, that's on the ground and you're picking up.
You'd be surprised how much money, how many things that come across because they're legacy tasks or OEM tasks. OEM doesn't know what you're doing. The OEM doesn't know your operating context.
Ho, 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 ho. For the listeners out there, OEM stands for?
Original Equipment Manufacturer.
There you go.
So they don't know. They build it. They come up with an all-encompassing strategy. But it's down, that's what RCM's about. RCM is also about looking at your operating context. Because you might have to do more, not less, more.
Okay, listeners out there, we're going to have to wrap this up. Martin, are you active out there on LinkedIn? Or do you just respond to mine?
Nowadays, it's the only place I can be active, I think.
Take note of that. That is exactly right and true. Yeah. All of a sudden, everybody's out on LinkedIn.
Totally, mate. Totally.
All right, so reach out to him. It's Martin Robinson. Put in Iris, I-R-R.
I-R-I-S-S.
There you go. Yeah. I-R-I-S-S. Got it, IRS.
Excellent.
And you'll find him. He's a good-looking guy, flowing hair.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's on the floor.
He's flying his hair in front of me. That's for doggone sure. Anyway, hey, get it done, guys. Listeners, get it done. At least talk to somebody about this because it's an important. It's important. Hey, oh, one last thing. You've got something coming out. Possibly, we're going to have another podcast. It's going to feature you and some other things that are you doing with Iris that are going to be exciting.
Yes, we've got some products that we're launching hopefully next week. Obviously, with what's going on, it's driving some of our work. So,
we're going to get on there and we're going to talk a little about that, too. And I like the fact that you're trying to remove the friction away from doing this and making it as simple as possible, gathering the information, the data that is needed to make real tactical decisions. And it's all done from a safety perspective. I like that.
Absolutely. KISS, mate. Keep it simple, stupid. That's it.
That's KISS principle.
Nice and easy.
I love that all the time. Hey, Martin, thank you very much for being on the podcast. You were absolutely wonderful. And listeners, do not go away. We're going to wrap it up on the other side because you need to continue to reach out to Martin. So I am going to give you all the information on the other side after the break. So stay tuned.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Cheers.
Take care, mate.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Hey, as I promised, we're going to wrap it up on the other side. This is the other side. You can reach out to Martin Robinson, of course, at all of the links that I provide on this particular podcast at industrialtalk.com. Again, paper and pencil time. Let's get on the calendars. It's May 21st at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and you need to get ready for this virtual conference that is sponsored by IIoT World. Be ready to scale digital for manufacturing 4.0 through challenging times. Sponsored by Hitachi Ventara. Both companies innovate. Both companies see the power and benefit of collaboration. Both companies are just dedicated to education and getting you more prepared for what this brave new world looks like. Because, personally, there's some challenges out there. So again, May 21st, 2020, brought to you by IIoT World, sponsored by Hitachi Ventara, 11 a.m. Eastern Time is the date. Again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. Remember, you got to collaborate because you don't have all the answers. Again, you got to innovate. You've got to educate. It's time. Right now, it is time to educate, right? Take action, and you're going to scuff your knees. Got to do it fast. We need you. Thank you. Take care. Be safe, be bold, be brave, dare greatly, change the world. That's what we're all about here. Thank you very much, and we will talk later.